Yeah, we met.
It's true.
Yeah, that was 5 years ago. Yeah.
I have no idea.
This is me. Like, I didn't really tell anyone. I was doing it on the fly. And I think that I just carried a bit of like internalized shame about acting or something. There's something about like, I don't know, like actor culture that kind of irks me. So I kind of just did it quietly, and then it became something else and it wasn't really quiet anymore. But yeah, what do? I guess I identify as an artist. but I do a whole bunch of different things. You know, we were talking before about how I just get too excited about too many things and do lots of different projects and find myself in a bit of a thinly stretched tizzy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I've come to accept that about myself, that it's just how I function best is when there's like 17 things happening at once. And
the chaos,
but like it's not even that. It's like if I have like if things start to get really turbo, if I'm doing like 4 things and they all start to kick off, I also have this tendency to want to like add like 3 more things.
Okay.
Just to like
just to make it more interesting.
Just to really go.
Yeah.
I feel like that's when I'm at my like.
You're like, there's 10 things going, let's hope those 4 still stick, and then
I feel like I can focus more if I'm like across 12 things.
No lull periods.
Yeah. The more I'm doing, the more I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it really exciting. Like I love that. I love the like to like really push the boundaries of like what I'm capable of.
When did you realize you loved to do that? At what point as a kid did you?
I think it's actually just been in reflection.
Okay.
Like I've just been like, oh, that's kind of a weird thing that not, I've thought that everybody did this, but that's not the case. yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it was learned. Like the way that I was raised, my mum is an absolute tycoon. She's a business bitch. And okay. We had to work very hard from a very young age. We had a family business that needed to be run after my family fell apart. And my brother and I had to work in the shop like before and after school every day.
What kind of shop was this?
It was like a bakery cafe kind of situation.
Up north.
Yes, in Brizzy, Sunnybank Hills. So I learned very early to juggle a lot of shit. And so I think an element of how I am now is that it feels that's where I feel most comfortable is like functioning very highly, like doing a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as it pertains to like making art, like that's just, it hasn't really ever been a decision. It hasn't really been a conscious decision. It's just the way that I connect with people and the way that I feel the most truthful and tender and how I process the world, which has always been that way.
Mm-hmm. And when was that? So when you were younger, what was that sort of? You were the first ever art project you did, and you were like, "Oh, this is cool! I love this!" And I'm showing, you know, a little bit of myself to the greater audience, and I'm young, and you know, maybe people are listening to you. You've got a voice. So do you remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I was always drawing. And I think I always, like, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, I want to be an astronaut.
Yeah.
I want to be a fire hydrant. Like mine was always artist, but I don't think I really thought about that critically. For, you know, it's like, oh, I like to craft.
Yeah,
but
we all drew as well.
Yeah, such a big, much, much bigger part of, like, what's expected of you as a child. Mm. But I remember there was, like, a turning point where I remember it so clearly, and I was like, oh, I can actually do this pretty good. Like, I'm pretty good at this. It was like, I had just broken up with my first boyfriend.
13?
No, I was like 15.
Okay.
He was a little bit older.
Ah, yes.
He was an Italian guitarist.
Oh, wow. Very... He got a motorbike.
Not,
a Vespa,
yet.
A Vespa.
Not yet, because he was only 17. Okay. But but in his spirit, rode a motorbike.
Yeah.
And I was so forlorn, and I decided to do a self-portrait.
For him to never forget.
Sorry?
For him to never forget.
I just need to, you know, show how I'm feeling. I can't put it into words, so I drew myself. And it actually was really good.
Okay.
So I was like, oh shit, I can do this. This is I've actually got some ability here. And then from there I started to just do lots of pencil portraits of my friends, like really intricate pencil portraits of my friends, like sketched my friends onto my bedroom walls and like, you know, just kind of went from there. Yeah. And wow, I just never really stopped.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And where did that sort of, because obviously I mean, 5 years ago, and you were doing, to give the audience an understanding, is you'd created these pieces of hair. And
yeah.
They were like outrageously outworldly. They were how do I explain it? It was.
I would say they're kind of grotesque.
Yeah, kind of grotesque. They were.
Kind of gross.
So from pictures to, you know, pictures of friends on your wall and of intricate.
Yeah.
Of intricate detail to gorgeous hair. What happened in between?
Oh, heaps. Cool. Yeah, so I was drawing and painting for 10 years. I started to do, so I like, through school, I ditched as many, like, I ditched maths in grade 9. Yeah, I ditched most
all
of
the
things.
All the money making.
All the things that would help me in life, I ditched.
So no economics,
yeah,
no finance, none of
forget
that.
About it. Legal studies, get out of here.
Yeah.
But I took up as much art as I could.
Okay.
I forgot what we were talking about. I just lost my train of
thought. What happened between?
Oh yeah, okay. So I was between drawing and painting through school.
Yeah.
And then I started
still
doing
about the Italian.
Yeah. I'm not over it. and I started doing murals. That was like the first thing I started to do was
cool.
Like, you know, commission murals around Brisbane. And then kept doing that, started to try and build a career doing that, did like weird little commission jobs and like, you know, live art parties and helped brands do branding things and sold paintings and just that kind of game. Until I was like 21 or 22, I think.
After exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I had a really lucky break in my early 20s. This is after I'd started to do a bit of acting. I got myself an acting agent and I booked a really big Telstra campaign.
Okay.
Where, you know, they were looking for someone to play an artist in just like a regular ad, just one off like a TV spot. And I went in after painting a mural and was like, it's me. You know, like, this is my life. This is actually who I am. And I contacted my agent and was like, can you send them material of my actual work and me painting so that they can see, like, you know, just beef this application up a little bit. Because I really wanted that.
Because she's a real painter.
Yeah, I was like,
she's a real artist.
And at the time, I was dead broke, and I was like, "Oh, that 5K would be very helpful."
Yeah, yeah. You already allocated it.
Yeah, I was like, "Oh shit." And so they saw that and were like, "Oh wow, maybe we could do something else with this." And it ended up snowballing into this like 2-year-long gig of doing live art in the stores. Loads of different video spots, voiceover, like just the whole plethora of things. And it paid, it just put me in a different, it greased the wheel so much financially.
Well, comfortable.
Oh, that's the thing.
As
like,
an artist, I think that's one of the biggest things is that you're forever eating yourself inside because you're working out where the fucking next page is.
Totally. And you can't be, I've come to realize that I can't personally be effectively creative if I don't feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that changed everything for me. And I was able to be like, oh, hang on a second. What do I actually want to make? Because I don't know if this what I'm doing is actually what I want to do. I'm just doing this to try and pay the bills in a way that feels slightly good to me. But now I have the space to sit back and not have to try and make money for a second. And so I was able to get like a big studio space with a whole lot of other artists, which was really cool, and experiment. And I just like got rid of the paints and started fucking around with like
different mediums.
Just whatever. Like yeah, I was collaging and pouring resin all over myself, like just going a bit wild. And from there I got very much more in touch with the part of myself that loves like installation work and sculpture. And yeah, that's how we found our way to the grotesque hairy sculptures.
And in that space of you know, being in a creative space and you were, I guess, exploring different mediums, what was that like? I guess I've been in a space where I've been in, you know, share spaces, and it's like, oh, so many different walks of life. And
yeah.
Like, what resonated with you? What kind of other people's, what did they bring to the table during that period? Was like, and what made you grow through that that period? Because obviously you're still young, you're still trying to find your feet, you're still trying to find your own voice, I think.
Yeah.
I guess all different walks of life, different ages.
It was, yeah, it was really reassuring. It was really affirming to just kind of, and I hadn't had that before. I hadn't worked in a space. I hadn't had like an arts community per se. And setting up like me and a couple of other artists set up a new space in Marrickville and like knocked walls out, painted the floor, like made it all like this beautiful communal art space. And it was just, it was really reassuring to be around a bunch of people who work all a little bit further along in their career than me and like making a living out of it in a serious way. And like, you know, it was like Georgia Hill and Fintan McGee and James Lesjack Adden. There's like a bunch of really successful mural artists, Australian mural artists. So it was just really cool to be surrounded by peers who were like making a life of this, which I think
gives you, obviously, shows your path.
100%, because like
we're not all struggling.
Like people who are struggling in the same ways as me, be like, oh, this is I'm not the only one who's freaking out. we're all in this same game, and there's community here, and there's joy, and there's success for everybody,
And there's room for everybody.
And I think that was really interesting for me too to see, because I feel like the Australian arts industry is a lot smaller and a lot like over in America and stuff, like it's everywhere and everyone's able to make a buck and make things happen.
It's just a market, it's a massive market as well.
It's just much more accessible for lots of different types of people. So it was really cool to like find that in Australia at that point in my career. It's like, oh, this is a life that I can have. And it's not like, I feel like, there's no career artists in my family. And so that wasn't ever really modeled. And so I always felt like I was just like doing something that was a bit strange and maybe not viable, you know?
Were they supportive of it?
100%.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but like being like externally supportive is one thing and actually modeling something is different. Thank you. It's all about you, isn't it? It's true. Fully presenting herself. Excuse me, ma'am.
This is funny.
It was awesome. I look back on that part of my life very fondly. It was a really cool time.
Mm.
It was a very cool time. Just to like even have people to have food with on your lunch break. You were all like doing the same thing. Yeah. You know? It was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, we're not just doing it on our own.
Yeah, which I've done a lot in the early years. I just was like,
now what?
Self-flagellate, I've got to do it. I've got to get to shut myself away in a studio and make work. And,
yeah.
You know.
And are you still like that?
No, my life's very different now.
Okay.
Yeah. For reasons that we'll probably talk about. Yeah.
Well, being an undercover actor.
I've been a sneaky little actor.
Yeah, sneaky little actor.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? And what drove you to that? And how did that start? And how the sneakiness and why the sneakiness?
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll start with how it started. I'd always kind of been interested in it quietly.
Can't rub your bum on camera.
She's staring me right in the eyes. I had always been kind of interested in it, but I didn't let myself go there because I wanted to stay focused on my art and was already doing 10 things. I was like, if I do that, I'll get really interested in it and I'll lose sight of what I'm actually doing. In my early 20s, I'd been in Sydney for a couple of years and I dated an actor for a second and there were more actors around me in my hospital job and there was just more of it around me and it started to feel a bit louder. And then this is a bit red hot, but okay, let's go there. I dated this actor and this actor, I got steamrolled. It was just a bad time. And what drove me was actually a bit of spite to like want to be better.
That's a good way. It's always a good way to drive.
I tell you what, spite is a powerful motivator. And I've I didn't admit that to myself for so long and I didn't admit that to anyone else for so long. But I'm like, if I talk to a creative and they're like, I don't know, we're just chatting about stuff or for some reason they are, you know, we're just, I don't know, comparing stories. Mm-hmm. Or I'm like, if you can find someone to spite with your success, that will get you. Like, do it. Like, no, find someone to fuck over with your success. it'll be more powerful than anything else.
To us, to yourself, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. so, yeah, that was kind of the... And I wouldn't give a shit about that anymore. Like, you know...
That was a driving force there.
That was the flint.
That was our moment.
That was the flint. And I think I also learned that from my mom because she... Like, off the back of my dad leaving, like, she was like, you know what? I could sell this business that you started with me.
Fuck the bastard.
You know what? I'm going to make it fucking empire.
And she did.
And she did.
Did she? Yes. Go, mom.
She fully did. And she's, like, killing it. She's killing it now.
Still killing it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. She's smashing it. So I think that I kind of learned that. That was probably thanks to mom. Thank you, mom. Yeah, and like, you know, like a year later, like I couldn't give two shits about him or whatever happened, but that it was the thing that like that kicked me off.
And drove.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? Like, so you felt that, and then what, you went and did acting classes? Or did you just go into it with an agent, or what did you?
Let me cast my mind back. It's so long ago now.
Short films, theatre.
I had an interest that was hovering around. Spite focused me, like the magnifying glass with the
sun. Anything that he was going to audition for, you were going to audition for.
I'm going to get up on. You know, so I just, what did I do? My God, I have to really think back. I think I paid someone to shoot a show reel for me. It was terrible. I was terrible. Then I researched into different agencies in Sydney, did a huge email blast to the ones that I liked with like my background, my showreel, whatever. And I heard back from one of them immediately. Didn't hear back from anyone else. And it was my agent that I've had for going on 10 years now.
Wow.
And he is like family to me. And he's awesome. Amazing. But it was really funny because he'd like, I got an email back from him so fast and he was like, oh my God, Jess Bush, I saw you on Australia's Next Top Model. And I said, one day she's going to get into acting and I want to represent her, but I don't know how to find her. I don't know how to get in contact with her. And then he emailed me. How's that? Can you come in? And then so I went in and met him. The rest is history.
His name?
Clinton Bryant Madison.
There you go.
And he's since gone off and made his own agency. He was a booker friend of one agent. And now he's got and made his own agency and he's I love that man. He's beautiful. Right. Beautiful, excellent at his job. Stunning professional man. Yeah, so I found an agent and then I started to like do classes, I guess. But I don't know, there's something about like I tried the NIDA thing and I tried the I'm of a mind that you have to be really careful about the kind of acting training that you do. Because there's a lot of ways to do it and a lot of ways to fuck up your intuition.
Okay.
I think that training is valuable, but as long as you find the right one that's going to work for you.
What method works for you, do you say?
Yeah, well, it took me years to find them. I did like NIDA classes and then had to like figure out ways to shake it off because it didn't really work for me.
What was their method?
Oh, they teach everything. The one that I did was like a month course that was like a week of each big acting method.
Okay.
Like the Meisner method and whatever. And it was just too much intellectual information for me. It was too much.
Not enough practical.
Yeah. It wasn't clarifying.
Yeah.
Okay. It was like busy. Maybe 4 years ago, I found the method that I love. And it's the Perdekamp emotional method. It's like a German theatre school. But they're based in Melbourne as well.
Okay.
And I have been training regularly with them for 3.5 years now. And I will continue to train with them forever.
Because yeah.
the way they approach things is deeply physical. And it is approached kind of like a physical practice. So like you treat it more like gym training almost. Mm-hmm. Like it's more of like an ongoing practice, which I really love, and is really good for how my brain and body works. So I love them. Everybody should go and check them out because they're phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
And they do a lot in the mental health space and like addiction treatment and mm-hmm. just all sorts of things. So if I wasn't acting, I would be teaching this for sure. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then so... It took a while to find that, because that's obviously three, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But in between then, you were just intuitively rolling with it and working out, obviously still painting murals.
Yeah.
Looking for a chest hair.
Sewing 200 wigs together.
Exactly right. Being on a straight top model.
Oh, that was.
That was prior to that.
That was when I was a kid.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Always in and around it. So was it, would you say, and I think it is also, but I think it's intuitive, isn't it? It's really, the process is intuitive. And you felt it, that you feel, you know, what's going to work and what's not going to work.
Yeah, look, I'm really glad that I found training, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of it is intuitive. I would put it in a different way, though. I would say... As children, you inherently trust your own body and your emotions.
Mm.
And as you are groomed to be a civil member of society, you learn to distrust those things. And I think that through training acting, my hope is... I'm so sorry. To learn how to trust those things again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still like, it's not just like blind intuition. It's just like listening to your system and trusting it. What was the start of your question?
So I think the... Do you want to start?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm going to... I'm going to get text. Where am I? The marketplace.
Of course.
Wanting to buy a rug.
Strawberries or raspberries?
Raspberries.
Then it's stuck to see then it's stuck in your teeth.
My teeth are so big and really tightly packed. There's no problems there. And raspberries are cool because they kind of feel like, I feel like they feel like lip skin.
Ah, yeah.
You know, they've got that, like, fleshy...
And they've got that little hairy parts on as well.
Yeah. I like going like this.
Ah, they're grotesque.
They are a little bit grotesque. Yeah, a bit fleshy.
Favorite actor of all time?
Oh God. I love Florence Pugh.
Oh yeah.
I love her.
Midsommar was great.
Oh, she's phenomenal. And I also just love how she carries herself in the media.
Mm-hmm.
She's very authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And unapologetic, I find. And I really love that about her.
No?
No. I don't know if I would probably, I think I would be starstruck. She's just cool. She's and so obviously cool. Very smart.
Yes.
You know, like she's switched on and she's paying attention.
Yes.
And so I think that I would be like,
like when Jennifer Lawrence met Jack Nicholson.
Oh my God.
Have you seen that?
No.
Oh, that's brilliant. I think you congratulated her for something at an awards ceremony.
Yeah.
She turned around. She's like, oh, yeah. And then she turned back. Oh, yeah. Jack Nicholson. I think anyone would be too.
Yeah.
But I think you kind of explained your process to some degree. And,
yeah.
And obviously to where you've come to now, we discussed it prior, and if anyone's watching, don't know where you're at now. How did that happen? Because I remember when we caught up, you know, you'd Star Trek, it happens.
Yeah. So how did Star Trek happen?
How did that happen? And what happened prior to that?
Yeah.
Did you get into that, I guess? So more importantly, so let's start. So there's that intuition, and there's that finding Clint. And what did Clint do and help to move your career towards the Star Trek?
Oh God, it was so like it wasn't like a neat, delicious, inspiring story. There's a lot of uncertainty and questioning whether I was doing the right thing, and like, it wasn't easy. It was like it's hard. It's
ups, downs. It was never linear, I imagine.
Sorry?
It was never linear. Was
no
linear.
Way. And you know, I tried to do, I've started like 5 uni degrees. Trying to find a way to not do this.
Yeah.
It's so difficult at times and isolating and like just doesn't make a lot of sense a lot of the time.
Mm.
But Clint's always been very supportive of whatever I've wanted to do and whatever I've needed, which I think is quite rare with agents. A lot of people feel like they, this has just turned into a Clint and Brian gas up. That's cool. It's like whatever I've needed. So there was like, there was like 5 years or something where like I was pretty much always at arting, always doing art,
mm-hmm.
and making a living out of that one way or another. And I would be auditioning for things, and I'd like booked a couple of little things in Australia, just like guest roles, 4-episode things. It took a lot of years for that to even start happening.
Like, yeah.
Australia's hard.
Because it's such a small market, isn't it? Is that what it is? And it's
super small market, and also the people with the money are really scared to take risks on new people.
Okay.
So if you break into that like family of actors that you see on everything on Australian TV, mm-hmm. then you're pretty sweet. But yeah. Like, it's really hard to get there.
So what were you in? What was there anything that's significant that you were in?
I don't want to say because then everyone's going to go watch it.
Neighbours, was it Neighbours?
No, no, I did. I was on Home and Away as 2 different characters.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
2 different characters?
You know, like a few months apart.
Oh, right.
Just so funny. I did a show called Playing for Keeps.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I did a show called Les Norton.
Okay.
I did an indie movie. That was the first thing that I did, actually. The first job that I booked that was, like, not an ad or something was this indie movie.
Cool.
And then...
How did you feel doing that?
I was awesome.
And you were lead or...
No, I was supporting. Oh, it was, like, an ensemble.
Okay. Were you shit scared?
Fuck yeah. Oh my God. Of course. I was terrified.
You're being paid to do something that you love.
Yeah. You're like, wait a second. Do I get to have this? Like, yeah. But it was wild.
And
it was really cool.
Imposter syndrome setting?
Hugely.
Yeah.
Hugely. So it's just like little bits and pieces, but not enough to like, you know, rub $2 together. It was just like bits and pieces every now and then. And then it got to like just before the pandemic. And I was 29 or 28 and I was just over it. Like, I think there's this thing that happens when you're an actor and you're starting to get somewhere where you get sent way more auditions. A lot of them are pretty rubbish material from America because there's lots of bad stuff that gets made.
Yeah.
And you're asked to be, you're basically doing a full-time job where you're auditioning and working on scripts and shooting them and outlaying money for that, and you never hear anything back. And it ramps up and up and up, and you start to get closer to things, but then you lose them, and it gets really difficult, like, to stay the course.
And that self-encouragement all the time, I guess. Yeah.
It just is really draining, and I mean, that's a champagne problem, and I know I should shut the fuck up, but it, like, yeah, it's draining. It's really emotionally draining, and I just got to a point where I was like, I'm 28, and like,
what am I doing?
Like, I have this other thing. Still do that. Yeah, fully. I think I've come to terms with the fact that I'm always going to feel like that, no matter what's happening.
Yeah. Life.
But like, I got to a point where I was like, this is not the life that I want. I'm not present with my friends. I'm not engaging in my life in the way that I want. I don't feel safe. I don't feel joyous. I have this other career that gives that I love and that makes me feel fulfilled in the visual arts. I'm stepping away from this. Like, the material that I'm getting is not inspiring. I don't feel like I'm truth telling in any way. I'm just serving something that's like fodder for, I don't know, big network advertising and shit. I was like,
just not a cock.
Yeah, and I was like, I need to take a step back. So I had a chat to Clint. I was like, look, I'm needing to take a step back, and I just want you to send me stuff that we can't say no to.
Okay.
You know, I just need a little mental health break. And so I stepped back, and I decided I would focus on my art for a year, and I built a huge, like the biggest installation that I've ever made, and the thing that I'm most proud of is my visual art. And I got a space at a community arts center called Create or Die that's now, I think, shut down, but it was awesome. It was such a beautiful year.
This is just part of COVID, 2019?
This was during COVID, actually. Yeah. So all through COVID, lockdown, my housemates and I were lucky enough to have like a really beautiful backyard that I could like experiment in. And I started to experiment with this idea that I had for years and not really been able to push over the line to something real. And yeah, just turned into a mad scientist in the backyard and got, the lockdown did something weird to me where it just made me like hyper focused. Mm-hmm. Like I was so focused and like just gunning at this project. Worked on this project for a year, got a couple of grants from the government to build it, and executed it. Took me like 6 months to build it. And then I installed it as I was installing it, I got an email from Clint about the Star Trek audition, and all the conditions were really of the audition were like very aligned. And so I put a tape down. I was like, it was like the end of a day of, I'd been installing for like 14 hours, looked like shit, hair standing on end, super tired. Put down the tape, sent it away, didn't hear anything for 3 weeks. And like, you know when you send something on WeTransfer and you can see who downloads it?
Yeah.
Like one of five people downloaded it. And I was like, probably fucked that one up. But then I heard back from them.
Yeah, right.
Like
ages with the one, later. Still with the one. That one person was one person.
She must have just showed everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
was across it. yeah, and I booked it when I was... Like, I think I just found out. No, I didn't. I installed the sculpture. I showed it for one night to an audience of 100 people, and it was magic. It was such a magic night.
Can I ask, what was the installation, and what did that mean to you? What was the driving? What was the artist that invested in that?
Yeah.
That installation.
Yeah. So the artwork is called the Bee Totem.
Mm-hmm.
It's an installation where I've collected 1,000 honeybees from beekeepers after they've died, and preserved each one in a perfectly uniform sphere of crystal resin.
Okay.
So it's like glass.
Mm-hmm.
And then suspended each one from a really thin sterling silver chain from a ceiling grid
mm-hmm.
at different heights.
Okay.
And it makes like a floating kind of marmoration. Memoration? That's the word.
Memoration.
Memoration. Yeah. Cut that bit out. Memoration of bees. The artist statement, I tend to not want to like tell you what it means, but I can tell you about some of the elements of it that are intentional.
Mm-hmm.
So it, where do I start? I feel like bees are a symbol of the point we're at with our relationship to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
They are the linchpin that holds everything together ecologically for us and the reason that we can thrive on this planet. And they're really strained and struggling at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I also think they're really beautiful, special insects. Mm-hmm. And I just am fascinated by them and how they work together. In the hive and the way that they move about and communicate and make things work is deeply fascinating to me.
And they
get too heavy from having too much pollen and they like
they're very cute.
They're so cute.
Yeah, very cool.
And did you know they can also like, so if a bee flies out and like finds some like amazing tree with heaps of pollen on it, they'll come back to the hive and different bees will communicate emotionally different levels of excitement for what they find.
And then they all get together in a gang and they all go together.
Yeah. But they have like personalities,
yes,
essentially, fine. Because one bee will communicate this level of excitement, whereas another one will not think it's a big deal.
Okay, right.
Isn't that so cute? So cool. Anyway, back to the.
Your love for that, and good segue is that your love for bees and your love for resin and your love of the art of that installation has drawn you also to making your own jewelry.
Yes. So you want me to talk about that?
No. Talk about what you want to talk about. I just thought I'd chuck that in there because you just saw that.
Yeah. Sorry, that's not funny. Yeah. So that's one element, is the symbolic nature of the bee as a talisman. And then there is
inherited parts of humans.
Yeah. What they represent.
Yeah.
What they represent. Also, wanting to, like, when you put a sphere of resin around a bee, it is like magnified and also draws your eye to that thing. So when you do that, I think that it really magnifies the beauty of this insect, makes people look a little closer. Well, that's my hope anyway. And then there's the other element that the sculpture really interacts with the environment that you put it in.
Mm.
So if there's sound move, like in the morning, like if you wake up in the morning and it's positioned outside, it's so still that it looks solid. And then as birds start flying around, the sounds of the day, there's people, there's air movement, it starts to move and breathe.
Yes.
And so that part of it is a really important element to me, is that it is one and the same as the environment. It's very interlinked with its environment, and there's a symbiosis there. And the other thing that I like is that it almost looks like it's engineered in a computer. And that's been achieved through a crazy level of attention to detail by a person that's not a computer. So I kind of love that illusion. and the suggestion that like something really beautiful and positive can be made from the combination of like human focus and technology, you know, like that kind of marrying. Yeah. And there's something there to be found that's good.
Wild.
Yeah.
In amongst hitting an audition with Star Trek.
Yeah.
Paramount, is it?
Paramount is the network.
Yes.
The distributor. Yeah.
And were you much into Star Trek before you ever auditioned?
No. No, I didn't. I mean, I was aware of it, obviously, because it's so woven into, you know, pop culture.
Yeah.
Not, a lot, some people can't do it.
I don't think I can do it.
That's okay. That's all right. You're just not one of us.
No, I'm not.
I'm so sorry.
So you heard back from them mid-COVID, this installation's happened.
Yeah.
You're still riding a high from the installation?
Well, I didn't even get to really ride the high. I just showed up for one night and then had to pack up and go, basically.
Oh, that quick?
Yeah.
That was that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really wild. And it was interesting because, like, my whole early 20s, I was so like, yeah, let's go get them. New places, new things. Let's go. Like stretching out, wanting to like live other places and meet people and do all this thing. And then by the end of my 20s, I was like, you know what? I'm going to stay put. I love my friends. I love where I live. I'm going to stay here and I'm going to work on building home here. And
where was this?
Enjoying this in Sydney.
In Sydney, yeah.
I was living with my three best mates and we were so blissed out and happy and like ready to like build a life with us,
you know,
develop like a chosen family and like bring partners into that, but like have our core be us.
Yeah.
So I had just like really gotten made peace with that. Been like, yeah, this is it for me. I'm going to stay. I'm going to be comfortable. And then this thing happened. I was like, you know what? You know what, Jess? You can go. Fuck yourself.
Yeah.
We're going to give you the biggest version of the other thing.
Yeah.
So I had a month to pack everything up and move over to Canada and be ready. Yeah.
And what was that like?
Crazy.
So you've left. You left here. You've left your family.
Yeah.
And everything you've kind of worked for the last sort of 10 years.
Yeah.
Coming out and stepping out into a set that you've probably never seen before, or you comprehend what it looks like, and how did that look like?
What's it
like on a? What's it like? Yeah.
So insane.
Are there people running around with coffees and clipboards and?
Yep.
Yeah.
First of all, I'll tell you what it was like to like move. There, like to do that, it just was like, to be honest, it was really exciting and just like my life changed in a moment, like in a moment completely. And that was very exciting. And
but
like,
what's part of it? What was the one thing that happened that you knew life will never be the same from now on in? What was that one thing? There must have been one moment you've gone, what?
That honestly keeps happening still. It's been 2 years.
Okay.
You know what was actually, you know, all of this crazy shit's happened. And I've been feeling like this constantly. But recently there was one moment I was like, this is the thing. This is the weird thing. They made an action figure of me.
Have you got it?
I'm trying to get my hands on it. But you know what? I'll go back a bit further. There was all of these, like I could list thousands of moments, but there was one moment that just like shook me to my core. And it was the first, so with Star Trek, there's this whole other side thing that you do where you go to conventions and they're all around the world. And it's like a day or two where they book out a convention center and all the fans can come and meet you and get things signed and have a chat and you speak on panels and they ask questions. And the first convention that I did, just, it was so beautiful. Like up until that point, what I'd been doing had been like a project, you know, like a creative project, a collaborative creative project with a bunch of artists and know, these abstract kind of creative ideas. And the first convention I did was in Vegas, and it was Star Trek specific. And I was just in tears the whole day. I couldn't take it. Just meeting all of these people who, like, this show means so much to them. And they are so tender and driven by love in such a beautiful way. And we just, as these new actors in this new Star Trek show, just become a conduit for them to connect to this thing. And just the level of appreciation I felt from these people and the level of wanting to share their excitement and just the like outpouring of tenderness and of like earnest human connection just flattened me. I was like, this is really special. Like in that moment, I really understood what we were doing. Oh, this makes sense. It all makes sense now. Like, I feel so lucky to be a part of this legacy. Star Trek is so special in the values that it upholds and the way that it's always pushed the envelope in regards to, like,
societal issues.
Political discussions and inclusion.
Just up on a starship.
Okay.
Just up in space.
Just up in space. Yeah.
Which is probably not going to be any different when we actually finally get up there.
Let's hope that we have a Star Trek future. Let's hope. It's just this thing that just keeps giving in ways that I could never expect. One being now that I'm getting involved in the real life space industry. So that's kind of insane and not unexpected. But I would say, the first convention that I ever went to was, it really floored me. Like I was so touched, just like fully disarmed.
And that's when the game changed. That's when you realized that.
Internally.
Internally.
And
the figurine was external.
The figurine was just like.
Yeah.
What? Fully.
Look, mum.
Yeah. Like.
If I'm not here, here we go.
Totally. So wild.
And how long has it been now?
We've done 2 seasons.
Cool. And that's reboot. Is that a proper reboot from the very get-go, from the connecting from the last?
So
what's the timeline of Star Trek?
Yeah. So the way that Star Trek has worked in the past is that there's the original series in the 50s, 60s.
Yep.
And then there's been several other series that jump back and forward in the timeline, the future timeline.
Okay.
And like fill in the gaps and like come from different angles. And ours is a prequel to the original.
Yeah, right, okay.
So it's not exactly a reboot, it's like, but we are
continuing the story.
We're bringing life to the characters. So there's a lot of legacy characters that we're like telling the story of their previous life when they're younger before they hit the original series. Yeah. Pretty cool.
And have you met any of the original characters, the original actors?
I met William Shatner.
Yeah, cool.
He's a dude.
He's a dude, yeah.
Yeah. But the Star Trek, I haven't met anyone else in the original cast, but I met George Takei.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's a legend. He's so cool. And has such an amazing voice. But I know a lot of the Trek actors from like Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, Lower Decks, like all the other ones, because they're all doing the convention circuit.
Right.
You meet up with each other, and it's actually so fun because all of the people in Star Trek are awesome. They cast people for some kind of inherent quality that they have that's like warm and optimistic and, you know, striving.
It falls into the line of the values of the writing itself.
Totally. And so these people are just like, just stunning and, you know, silly, but also earnest and interested. And it's just a really cool family to have been like scooped into.
Do you ever think much about what's after? Like, obviously from what I've understood, it's so ad hoc that it's just, day by day, it has been, and up until now, and now you've sort of got a plan with the Star Trek family. Do you think that do you have an idea of where you want to end up in the next kind of 5-10 years time, or what the plan is from the acting side of things, or will this outside outside interest of what Star Trek's given you, and I think you mentioned before, you're working with NASA at the moment on a documentary.
Not working with NASA on a documentary, but working on a documentary that involves NASA.
Okay, sorry.
I don't want to claim that falsely. yeah, look, with the people always ask me, like, what's your dream role? Where do you want to go? And that's never really been something that it's been, like, kind of really hard to answer that question. Because for me, like, the aim is to live as an artist, like, to live art, to be open to what that might look like. Because, like, you don't know, like, even if you're going to speculate about a role that's coming, like, you're never going to know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think if you get fixated on that, you miss out on what's around you. And, like, it just doesn't seem realistic to me to speculate. I think that what feels good to me is to, like, and this is true for my visual art as well. It's like seeing artistry and being an artist as a way of moving through the world and a way of processing things, and like that bringing me closer to other people, to more truthful moments. And I keep saying it, but like it just, I think my aim in life is to become more and more tender. Just always tenderness, always more tenderness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, access that as much as you can, stay as close to that as possible. So just living as an artist, connecting to other people through art, inspiring art in other people, and being excited about the unexpected ways in which that could show up is kind of my approach and how I hope to do that. I have recently discovered a burning passion for this other thing and I guess it all ties together, but like through Star Trek, I was able to connect with NASA, and they invited me to go and watch a rocket launch, and I was like, absolutely, that's going to be something that's going to blow my mind apart permanently. Like, I have to see that happen. So they invited me to launch and also asked me to speak on a panel. And the panel topic was how Star Trek and NASA have been so interlinked kind of throughout both of their trajectories,
mm-hmm.
and the influence of, like, sci-fi fiction, like science fiction, and space in the real world, like space development in the space industry in the real world, how they've been completely entwined, how they've influenced each other.
Yeah.
And I was with the chief technologist of NASA, Mike Gold, who is a friend of mine, and he is the guy who basically, he works for Redwire, which is a company that manufactures all the tech for the International Space Station, and he also is the shepherd of the Artemis Accords, which is like a code of conduct for moonfaring.
Okay.
So he made that all happen.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan Gendel, who wrote, like, one of the most famous episodes of Star Trek of all time, and me. So I was like, okay, so what are they wanting from me that's different? You know, like, what am I bringing to this panel? And it like, started this line of inquiry for me that I had never thought about. And they had a question for me that didn't end up actually, we didn't have time for it on the panel, but just them writing it to me for preparation really sparked this new train of thought. They asked me what space exploration meant to me as an artist, and I took that question to, like, mean, like, as a visual artist or an artist as a whole, not just as an actor, not just as a Star Trek character, like, as a visual artist. And it was really interesting for me to investigate that because I've never thought about it before.
Yeah.
And I started to read this book about this thing called the overview effect, which this ex-astronaut had written about what happens to someone's worldview when they're able to view the Earth from the outside. And it's a phenomenon that's present almost among, like, every single person who's experienced it. And it's just a complete shift in worldview. Like in a moment, everything changes for them. And it inspires like a greater tenderness for humanity, like an
appreciation.
Just like an immediate, solid, physical, unshakable understanding that everything is connected.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's not in like this mystical way. It's like it is. I can see it. And the divisions that we have in the world aren't real.
Mm-hmm.
We invent them.
Mm-hmm.
And also just like a enhanced responsibility for looking after the planet, an understanding of how miraculous the Earth is and how beautiful it is and how rare it is. And they're changed forever. But they've said it's really hard to communicate that when they get back. It's like a drop in the ocean that just
disappears. Who was that? Whose book was that?
Astronauts.
Oh, astronauts.
Yeah, so the author of this book is an astronaut.
Okay.
But he's also spoken to many other astronauts.
Astronauts, yeah, okay.
About sharing that same feeling. But they say that it's really hard to share that when they get back. First of all, it's hard to verbalize. Second of all, it just is, like I said, it just dissipates very quickly because there's so much other noise going on.
Yeah.
And that's one view, you know? So to me, I was like, that is the thing that artists should be trying to spread. Like, that is what this is. Like, that is what the value of space travel at this point, for me, is to, like, spread that understanding, that reality somehow. And that's the role of the artist to do that. It's like an opportunity to like level up the greater human consciousness. And it's a shame that like, you know, many First Nations cultures have understood this forever. But, you know, colonizing countries, colonizing societies don't. And maybe this will help to bring like the greater human consciousness in line with that of what First Nations people have understood kind of forever, you know, like
yeah
you know. Yeah. It's a shame that we have to go outside of the planet to do that, but like it's an opportunity. I think space travel is happening whether we like it or not. And it's like there's things to be harnessed from it, and I really hope that we can. Anyway, I just got a little bit lost, but what were we saying? Why did I tell you that? Oh, yeah. So, going to NASA and being asked that question got me interested in how space exploration impacts the cultural story on Earth, how we all feel about life on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I'm kind of going down a path of, like sitting in this zone of, like, art, space, human consciousness, like
science,
that like what is the role of the arts in the giant social movement that's happening towards colonizing space?
Yeah.
And how important is that is? I think it's extremely important. Mm-hmm. I think that the arts are an extremely important part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see myself getting very fired up and passionate about that, and kind of sitting in a space culturally that might mean that I can have a say.
Yeah.
Eventually, hopefully.
So, and that's why you're making a documentary based on.
So.
Or that idea, or how much can you tell us?
Yeah, I probably have to be a bit careful about what I say, but there's some things happening in the space industry that are not great.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay.
And they're.
So you're telling that story, and it's your. Without saying too much, you're trying to bring it to life.
Yeah, just want to get people to
understand it a little.
Yeah, just to have a little bit of a closer look, make it a little bit more relatable. Talk to more artists about what's going on, because I think that space for a lot of people is abstract and quite inaccessible. And I think that artists have the power to make that bridge, make it personal. And I think that's
important. Well, it's the endless idea of being inquisitive, isn't it?
What's space. That? Yeah.
Because we're so away from it.
Yeah.
So the next stop for you is astronaut?
Fuck no. I'd think about touching the end, like the edge, but
Come on.
I think
sculpture out in space.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'd be keen.
You do it?
Yeah, fuck yeah. Fuck yes.
I think I probably would end up not being able to say no, but it would not be an easy answer. Because I love the home so much. And it's so scary out there.
Yeah, yeah. Interstellar?
Far out. No thanks.
I think that even by you telling me about this astral, it's sort of come back with that.
Yeah.
You know, that feeling. And I think that feeling, obviously I can be nervous out of space and smelling and loud sounds and trucks.
We can close this door if you want.
Yeah, maybe I'll I think we all kind of get that feeling to some degree when we're in a moment of bliss in nature that we are not used to, and that appreciation of what we have around us.
Mm.
Like going out to North Queensland into a jungle, a part of the jungle out in Moss Bay Gorge, or where there's no one around, and you're from here, from Melbourne, or from Sydney, or from a city, and that's when the appreciation happens that this is so much bigger than us.
Yeah.
But I think I'm perhaps the more experienced.
You'd have to, wouldn't you? You'd have to. I think I'd have to. It would be just, I would be dead scared though.
Mm.
I'd be so scared. I'm a scaredy cat. I don't like heights. I don't like. I think I would have to do it. You're right.
Stay inquisitive. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Hopefully, you get something useful out of that.
Yeah, I think so.